Heard them. They're expecting me. Dale must have warned them. Maybe lied about why I'm here. If Greenwood Station gets to know I'm here, war's what it might be. She relaxed into her seat and felt the force flowing through her. Nerve ends tingling, senses sharpened. She tweaked the joystick to the left and stroked the trigger. And one of the ships exploded in a haze of fire and smoke. The second sentry took evasive action, swinging up and to the right in an attempt to drop back behind the peacemaker. But fast though they were, these small atmospheric craft were not designed for such complex maneuverability. Lannery followed, and as the ship reached the apex of its arc and slowed with the increased effort, she fired the laser cannons. The sentry's right wing exploded, and the craft started a long spin to the ground. Lannery drifted around and finished it off. No need to let the pilot suffer any longer than was necessary. She breathed deeply and thought briefly of the people she had killed. Their lovers and friends. Their families and stories. Jedi were taught to empathize with anyone they were forced to injure or kill. But Lannery never attributed these thoughts to the Force. They were all about being human.
"Great shooting," Tree said.
He clapped his hands together once, Leku meeting above his head in a celebratory embrace.
"I just killed two people," Lannery said.
"But you had to."
"Doesn't make it any nicer. We'll be landing soon. Part of Greenwood Station's northern sector was bombed during the war. We'll get in through there."
"You mean we're landing outside the dome?"
"Do you think they'll welcome a peacemaker into their landing base?" Tree fell silent as Lannery flew them toward the distant dome. The ship settled, ticking and creaking as its engines wound down and its hull began to cool. Lannery usually liked this part of a long flight, imagining that the peacemaker was sighing with satisfaction at a job well done and slumping, ready to recharge its muscles. But this was nowhere near the end of her journey. She'd changed her clothes, donning a long, flowing robe that hid her sword but made her feel like a Daibendu monk. "Ready?" she asked.
"Honestly," Trisana said, "after everything I've said, I still think I'd rather stay on board than go out there."
"Come on, Tree. You said my ship stinks." She grinned and keyed the code for the ship's hatch. A hiss, a groan, and the hatch swung down into a ramp, a breeze swirling around them as atmospheres equalized. Even behind the air mask she wore, Lannery swore she could smell the rancid atmosphere of this place. And if she hadn't been able to smell how toxic it was easy enough to see. They exited the ship into a drifting yellowish haze. Tree followed her down the ramp, the spare mask she'd found for him clinging to his face in all the wrong places. It was made for a human, not a Twi'lek, but it would have to do. She didn't plan on their being outside for any longer than was necessary. They'd landed in a dip in the ground, and Lannery had skillfully drifted the ship in against an overhanging spur of rock. It rested in shadow, but anyone looking even casually would be able to find it easily. She wished she had time to camouflage it somehow. Dust, or even some of the ragged creeping plants that she now saw grew here and there. But time was not on her side. She was very aware of the march of time, and that each movement moved Dale closer to carrying out his insane plan. She signaled the ship to seal up behind them, and paused to watch the ramp fold in and shut tightly. She caught a glimpse of Ironholgs just as the hatch closed. The droid would protect the ship with everything it had, but she was still worried. This might well have been the most hostile environment she had ever landed in. Greenwood Station was a smooth curve in the distance, just visible through the haze. She'd confirmed with Tree that this was indeed dawn on Nox, Tythos a blur just above the horizon past the dome. The atmosphere was so heavy with toxic pollutants, pumped out over millennia of mining and manufacturing, that Nox was denying the star itself. Lannery probed outward, sensing for trouble. There were life forms close by, but not many, and they were not sentients. She felt nothing dangerous, although she would never lower her guard. Her senses and caution were heightened now, and would remain so every moment she was here.
"This is nice,"
Tree said, voice muffled by his mask.
"Keep quiet," Lannery said. "These masks don't carry much air, and you'll waste it."
They walked across the desolate landscape toward the dome. By all accounts, Nox had once been a verdant world, and although much warmer than Tython, it had supported vast forests of giant trees with huge leaves to bleed heat to the sky, beneath which complex ecosystems existed. It was rumored that one large island on Nox had been home to more species of birds and mammals than the whole of Tython. But settlers had quickly made use of its rich metal deposits and endless wood supplies to build giant smelting plants, extracting 90% of the metals used across the system. Over the space of 1,000 years, most of the forests had vanished into ash, and with them the creatures they had supported. It had been a merciless despoilation of the planet, but at the time, the system had been a new, mysterious frontier, and those brought there by the Thoyor were desperate to make a home for themselves. The Jedi were finding their own path on Tython, and Nox's settlers had let need and greed guide their hands. It was desperately sad, but Nox was now beyond saving. Anything left was clinging to life. Mutation had increased, and there was little plant or animal life left on Nox that would have been recognizable by someone from 7,000 years before. Trees were gone, and the only plant life remaining was a low-growing, creeping scrub. Thin leaves gasping carbon dioxide from the tortured air. Roots growing deep in their search for nutrients. Small lizards scurried here and there. Lannery saw snake trails in the dusty soil, though she never spied a serpent. She guessed they kept themselves out of sight, perhaps living most of their lives below ground where the air could not kill them. The rains could not melt. By the time they were halfway to Greenwood Station, her skin was already starting to itch and burn where it was exposed to the atmosphere. As they drew closer and the settlement emerged from the haze, the damage to the dome's structure became apparent. It was as if a giant foot had stamped on the smooth dome, crushing the regular curve, reducing its surface area by a tenth.